You're listening to Trucking Questions from the Audio Road with Kevin Rutherford. This is the show that puts the money where it belongs, back in your pocket. You can ask questions about trucks, money, fuel mileage, maintenance, tires, tax, technology, or anything else about the business of trucking. Here we go. Let's head on down the Audio Road.
Good evening, everyone. This is Rico Muhammad coming to you live from Kinley, North Carolina, the Petrol over in Kinley, North Carolina, exit 106. If you're out in the parking lot anywhere around, feel free to come on inside and join us. I'm going to be joined tonight a little bit later on in a few seconds by Chad Bobbitt, the originator of the Rate Per Mile Masters Facebook page. But tonight we're going to start off by going into the trend lines, the DAT trend lines that they issue every Wednesday. And this week, looks like that the reefer market is still up in the southern states. The spot market trends were mixed last week as load availability increased for vans, dry vans. That's good news. Reefer capacity loosened up a little bit. Rates edged up on all three equipment types. So you should be starting to see a little bit of relief on your rates. You should be getting a little bit better rates this week. Another big topic that's coming up, we'll jump into the fruit and vegetable report. And this week, California's Imperial Valley is showing a slight shortage. They're moving onions out of that area. And Florida is still showing a slight shortage for potatoes. Eastern North Carolina is showing a slight shortage. Those are the only three markets, according to the USDA truck rate report, that are showing shortages. There are slight shortages going on right now in Central and South Florida, Lower Rio Grande Valley, and Mexico crossing through Texas. So that's a brief snapshot of what's going on as far as overall trends on rates and also with the fruit and vegetable report. So with no further ado, I'm going to bring on my co-host, Mr. Chad Bobbitt. Chad, are you there?
Yeah, how are you there, Rico? How are you doing?
I'm well, and yourself?
I'm good.
I'd like to just remind everybody, if you have... Yeah, I got you. You're coming in loud and clear.
All right, cool.
Just like to remind everybody that's on the line, if you got any questions or anything or a comment, just hit number one so we can see you and we can bring you up online. And, Chad, the hot topic this week in the Rate Per Mile Masters seems to be the CSA Blitz that's coming up next week.
We've had three different subjects go on about that topic. And from the numbers from last time I looked at it, it looks like about 33% of the group will not be on the road, and if they are on the road, their rates are going to be higher than normal, which is lower than what I thought it would be. So that means there's a lot more of the group that is going to keep on keeping on, like if it didn't even matter to them.
Yeah, it's kind of a funny thing. I mean, you were talking a little bit earlier, and a few years back, you know, I was remembering I was going to run. I decided that I was not going to run. I wasn't going to run during the TSA blitz, and I decided to shut down for those 3 days. And I got back running on the fourth day after the blitz was over with, got pulled into a scale house. And funny story was the DOT man was sitting out there on the scale, and he was just checking guys' logbooks as they came through. And anybody that hadn't ran over the CSA blitz, they would pull them around back, giving them level one inspection. So needless to say, I got pulled around back and got handed a level one inspection, which I passed everything all except for one thing. He dinged me on, and I still need to go get it fixed, but he dinged me on U.S. DOT in front of my DOT number. I don't have U.S. in front of the DOT, so he says by the letter of the law that must have USDOT on your placarding on your truck. And I still need to go get that fixed. Give me something to do on my to-do list for this week.
They were just looking for something. That's something that small. They were just just itching to find something with it. You know, my opinion is, you know, if there's going to be like a hassle going on when you're crossing the scale, that they're, you know, sending out a message that we're going to do heavy inspections on these dates if you go across the scale. I'm not going to mess around with it. I don't want to be bothered. I don't want to be stressed. That's the reason why I do this as an owner-operator, because I don't like the stress. And if I do go out on the road and have to deal with that stress, then yeah, my rates are going to be a little higher. Not that the shipper has to, or the broker has to pay a higher rate. It's like my daughters, they watch Dora the Explorer. And when my littlest one, before she could talk, when the troll would come out from underneath the bridge, she would smack the screen. She didn't like the troll, you know, and it made me think, you know, I'm the same way. I don't like the troll either. If there's a troll underneath the bridge, I'm not going to the bridge. You know, I thought that way when I was a little kid, and now I think that way still today. If there's a troll at the weigh station and they told me that they're going to mess with me if I come up there, then I'm not going near the weigh station. I'm not going to mess with it.
I heard that. Well, I don't know. It's kind of one of those things, like we were saying before. It's really one of those type things where I think that a lot of the people that went to the CMC and having the experience with Dale Howard going through a level one, you get a little bit more comfortable with the situation. I understand that some people may feel like it's a harassment issue, and it will. I think it may have some effect on rates. That depends on where you are, because as we all know by now, rates are a creature of supply and demand. So if there's less supply and there's more demand in certain areas, then, of course, shouldn't be a problem justifying a higher rate.
Absolutely. If you took the 33%, like, you know, last time I looked at the number, I think we're right at 33% of the group that participated in that survey that I did, that 33%, they're going to raise the rates or they're not going to drive at all. If you put that on a larger scale and you said 33% of all the owner-operators out on the road right now, they're thinking the same way. The owner-operators that have the ability to say that they can say whether they're going to drive or whether they're not. And if they have that ability, 33% of them are going to say, no, we're not going to drive. 33% of the owner-operators out there, if you took that out of the market, we got somewhat of an impact. I don't know how much, maybe not enough to make a significant difference, but 33% is a big number when you take that many trucks off the road.
Right, right. And just a reminder to everybody, press number one. If you got a question or anything, bring you up to speed. We were talking a little bit about the CSA crunchdown that's coming next week, the 3rd through the 5th. Do I have those dates correct, Chad?
Next week, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday.
June 3rd.
I have to look at the calendar to make sure.
Okay.
Yes, that's correct. And I'm also noticing, I read the DAT report, a little bit of the overview of the DAT report, and I'm looking right now at the current snapshot of load-to-truck ratios throughout the country. And it seems that things are kind of, I don't know if the holiday weekend had some effect on it or not, but it seems like things are really a little slack for this time of year. What are you noticing, Chad? What are you seeing right now?
Better numbers than this time last year, but as far as week to week, it seems like we're slowly, the demand is going down. You know, the demand is not as high as what it was last week, and it seems like last week wasn't as high as it was the week before that. I think it's
right.
Maybe because produce is slowing down, maybe?
Yeah, I know that last week Florida was, and for the reefer segment, was very, very dark blue, and this week Florida is light blue. You have a couple of dark blue patches, but for the most part, it is light blue, and it's very light, and it's kind of what kind of gives me a little bit of concern about going down there out of fear of getting stuck without having a good backup plan if you don't have a contracted shipper down there that you're dealing with.
Yeah. It seems like whenever it starts slowing down and it comes to a halt like that, it's like it's almost like within a matter of 2 or 3 days, boom, it's back in the red as being a really bad area to go to. You don't want to, and if you catch, like if you take a real long load, say if you're up in Minnesota or somewhere real far away, and it takes you 2 or 3 days to get there, you might end up there that day when the load shut off, and it'll instantly turn into red. It seems like overnight. It's happened to me a few times. That especially out of Oregon, I've seen that happen to me out of Oregon. I love to take loads in the wintertime because it pays good to go through Wyoming during the wintertime to go from like Kentucky to Wyoming, or as you were Oregon, before I leave Kentucky, you know, we're going to be showing that it's doing really good. I'm going to be able to get a decent rate coming out of there. But the 3-4 days it takes me to get out there, the market changes by the time I get out there, and boom, I'm stuck, you know, trying to grab pennies coming out, or, you know, go at a lower rate, you know, where I was planning on getting the $2.50. Now I'm coming out there at $1.75.
Right.
You got to when the trend starts happening, you better pay attention to it, because it could happen to you overnight when you end up, you know, offloading.
And I'm going back through, trying to go back through a couple of the markets that it was talking about on the fruit and vegetable report as well. Now, the Laredo market is still red fire hot. The Laredo and McAllen markets, I'm showing 10-to-1 ratios in the Laredo market, and I'm showing almost 17-to-1. In the McAllen Brownsville markets down on the Mexico crossing. So that's still very, very desirable area. And as a matter of fact, I'm seeing that it's must be so strong down there, it's actually bringing up a lot of the other areas within Texas, because right now Fort Worth is showing a 30-to-1 truckload to 30-to-1 ratio, 30-to-1 for reefers.
All reefers. Van real quick and tell me what it says.
Not a problem. You can do that at the click of a button. Van is not in that Fort Worth market. Let me put some clarity to the numbers and everything that I'm looking at too. The van market is anything above a 3 when it comes to vans, because there are so many vans, is actually a strong market. So right now the Fort Worth market is showing 3.3 loads to truck, which is, it's not great, pretty strong. It's pretty strong.
And that's for van, right?
And also in the Laredo market, you're at a 3.7 for a dry van, and McAllen is also at a 3.7.
So for myself going down that way, I might make more money coming out of Texas if I grab a short run down to Laredo and come out. What do you think?
Yeah, it's possibly you could. We got a couple of questions coming up on the line here, Chad. Let's go and see if we can help some people out. We got a caller from the 916. Caller from the 916. What's your name and what are you calling about?
Well, my name is Paula, and I'm not sure if I actually pushed the button or not, so I apologize. But I have been thoroughly enjoying the website, the Facebook page. I've been learning a lot. We just got our insurance. We're in a 10-day dispute, and I really don't have questions right now. I don't know what happened. I'm sorry.
Well, that's fine. It's all right. If you just press the number one, it puts you in our queue, and it lets us know to come to you. But so you don't have any questions, nothing that you can think of right now?
It's on my phone, too. Well, not right this minute. The next one that's in the queue, that's the 916, that's my husband who's sitting right next to me listening as well. So I'm sorry.
Okay, so both of you guys are in the truck together?
Actually, we're sitting outside at a truck stop in lawn chairs and a nice breeze.
Oh, okay.
Listening.
You're living the life.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
Good
deal. Yeah, we put in our 2-week notice, and we're looking forward to applying everything that we're learning.
Getting ready to take the plunge. So what type of
equipment
do you guys want to run?
We have a 2012 Cascadia that is fully paid for, and we're purchasing a reefer trailer.
Okay.
And it's a 2013. I'm sorry?
Are you going to be getting your authority?
Yes.
Yes, that's what you were saying.
Okay, good. All right, cool.
Yeah, our 10-day dispute period ends on Tuesday.
Okay. Did you guys get hooked up with NASPI?
We went with OIDA to help us with that.
No, that's fine with as far as that's concerned. Did you get with NASPI so you can get on their fuel program?
We were doing some researching. We haven't decided yet on which fuel program we're going to be going with. I'm sorry, I couldn't catch that.
I'm sorry. Yeah, I was saying I highly recommend NASTIC's program. It's a very good program. It'll pay for itself within the first month, especially if you guys are running teams. They also have a very good drug consortium. You and your husband can go through their new entrant program, and they'll get you prepared to go through your new entrant audit. You'll be able to drug test your husband, and your husband will be able to drug test you because, of course, you couldn't drug test yourself. But they have a very good program. Some people complain a little bit about the program that they have you go through. They say it's a big sales fest, which they're a company. They're a for-profit company, but they do offer very good things, and you just need to take into consideration if the services that they offer you, would you actually use them, and only pay for what you think you're going to actually use. As far as their fuel program, they have probably the best fuel program for owner-operators out there.
Cool, we'll check it out then.
And I've posted, I don't know how long you guys have been on the member of the Facebook page, but many of us have posted, and I may even go back through and do it again tonight if you didn't catch any of them, invoices from my fuel ups, so that you can actually see tangible results as to what kind of a discount you can get through NASTIC. It's a really strong program.
Oh, that'd be awesome.
All right, so you guys are getting ready to get your authority. Where are you guys based out of?
We live in Sacramento, California. So we'll probably be doing California and going from there. I mean, all over. We're going to figure out where things are and lanes and stuff like that.
Okay, well, sounds good. Well, sounds like you guys are bright-eyed and bushy-tailed. I wish you guys all the success in the world. And if there's anything that we can do to help you out in the future, you know, feel free to reach out to us or ask us a question if we can help out. And if we can't, there's a ton of information available on the website. We have not only myself, but you have Chad, you have George Heck, who is a former salesman. And the list goes on and on. I know I'm leaving a bunch of people out, but there are a ton of people on there that has good information that can definitely help you increase your rates and help you stay successful. Chad, you got anything you want to add before we let it go?
Yes, sir. You're just now getting your authority. Did the group, joining the Facebook group page right from Mount Masters, did that have any impact of you all getting your authority now? Is this something that y'all would have done anyway now, if you didn't was a member of the group? Did it help at all with any of that?
Well, we had already decided to get our authority, but it has helped calm some of my fears. It's been a place where I can actually go and learn, because otherwise my husband has had experience way back 25 years ago. A lot of things have changed. So it's been a good place for me to learn and read and see what other people do. And so that has calmed my concerns down some. And it's the place where I feel free to ask questions. And I've gotten a lot of answers, and I really appreciate it.
Oh, great, great. I'm glad to hear all that. I've seen quite a few people that been getting their authority here recently, and a lot of them have told me at the CMC and on the group page that the group has really helped them out on taking that plunge and getting their authority. A lot of people are with that company, and they feel that security, and now they got the group there to be able to ask questions and go about, you know, getting their authority. They got a little bit more of securement, and a lot of people taking the plunge and doing it. I think this year and next year there's going to be a whole lot more people that's going to do it now as the group grows and the podcast. As soon as you get your MC number and your authority, I want you to also join the group called Motor Carrier Meetup, and that's a lot of the people that's in our group, but it's the members that already have their authority, and there you can, you know, it's a little bit more, you're dealing with just people with their authority, and but you got to have your MC number, and it's all for a purpose, you know, because in that group we can as you're a carrier, we can help each other out. Maybe you're coming to Kentucky, and I live in Kentucky, and I know a shipper there that's got reefer freight, and they also do dry van. I take care of the dry van, but you're coming there, and you might ask if you can get it connected with someone there, and I can lead you to a shipper, and vice versa. I might be in California. You can do the same for me, and that's sort of the reason why it's just for the just for carriers only.
Awesome. I will do that. Thank you.
That's it for me, Rico.
All right. Well, thanks for the call. I'll put you back
on.
Thank
you for being here for us. I appreciate it.
Not a problem. Not a problem. And Chad, you know, it's kind of, you know, to horseback on what we were talking about a little earlier, you know, we're basically in uncharted territory. By us having a platform to have these podcasts and by us having the Facebook groups and us sharing information and trying to help exchange ideas and give a little bit of back and forth. I mean, we're all learning from one another, and it's going to help the entire owner-operator community begin to really, it's going to lift all boats. You know, the rising tide lifts all boats, and it's going to have a residual effect by helping everyone see better rates because we're starting to get a little bit of traction. We're getting a lot more education out there, and people are taking to this like fish to water, and it's one of the most gratifying things for me is, you know, seeing some of the stuff that we talk about, actually people give us feedback and saying that they're actually seeing some real results from what it is that what's been going on. So I just love that part about it.
Oh, I do too. And that type of feedback and the comments that, you know, people that send me messages, it's like, hey, that gives me the drive to help out more people. You know, after I found my load, maybe I can help someone else out. I'm loving it. And, just like she said, you know, she's getting the support. And it's just not me and you. It's a lot of the people in the group. They're helping them out. It's like the group is running itself. And it's running itself by informing others and helping and educate them. And, this is uncharted territory. You hit it right on the nail right there. It's so true. You know, I was also thinking about this too. And while I was talking to a friend, he's a broker. He was. He's no longer working for me anymore. But it's TQL. He was a broker for TQL, and he was telling me some of the things that go on. And he's a very nice guy. And he was, you know, so he has no reason to lie to him or anything. But he was telling me that, not just TQL. Now take that part out of it. But this is many brokers that follow are like this, where they're so perfect that. To where they would not have a job if every time they picked up the phone and called an owner-operator and they tried to sell them a load, if every owner-operator was somewhat more educated than what they are now, a lot of the brokers that wouldn't have a job. They solely get most of their money off of finding that owner-operator that is uninformed, that's easy to put loads on that the driver has no idea where he's going. You know, there's times I'm in Texas right now. I'm on my way to Texas. There's times a year I won't even go to Texas for less than $3 a mile. And where other people, they come to Texas and, oh, it was good last time I'm there. It's not always like that. And by us informing, getting owner-operators more educated and having a place for them to go to get resources like this, there's going to be brokers that aren't going to have a job anymore unless they get on the bandwagon that they're going to have to sell their loads at what the rate is, on the market.
Yes, sir. And I just want to make sure I give out at least one good tip every week for everyone that does have their own authority. If you have not heard of the National Motor Freight Traffic Association, that's an association that you might want to look. Go to Google, you know, Google NMFTA, National Motor Freight Traffic Association, and go and get your SCAC code. That's your standard carrier alpha code. And this will sometimes help you in the being able to go out once you get your own direct shippers. It helps them code you into their billing system a lot easier and quicker. And you may notice sometimes on some of your on some of your bill of ladings how some brokers there have like their word their the name of their brokerage or whatever abbreviated, kind of, you know, like a three letter or four letter code up there at the top. Well, that's probably their standard carrier alpha code. That's something that you might want to look into to help build your credibility as a motor carrier. So we've talked about before about building a credibility kit. That's something else that, that lets people know that you're not just a fly-by-night, that you're actually serious about your business. And it's kind of another step of setting you apart, something to differentiate you from the pack. Something else that we as smaller carriers might want to definitely need to start looking into is being able to accept EDI payments or getting on an EDI system. Some shippers won't even let you in the door if you don't have EDI capabilities. These are some of the things, just some of the things that we, you know, just throwing little bits and nuggets out there, and it may be something on a future podcast that we may go a little bit more in-depth into. But that's something I want to throw out there real quickly to kind of help everybody, something else to put a feather in your hat to help separate you from the crowd. So, Bobby, what are you seeing this week as far as well, thanks. What are you seeing this week as far as rates? Are your rates really good this week, or is it kind of stagnant?
I would say they're staying about the same as last week. Yesterday was a little disappointing. I got I was going to Missouri, and the part that I was going to Missouri, it was showing good numbers, and I didn't think it was going to be that hard to get a decent load out of there, but Tuesday felt like more of a Monday, and I guess it's because of the holidays, and I didn't get started looking for a load yesterday until around 1, and I lowered my standards all the way down to 222 a mile coming out of there on something average, something decent, and I just wasn't getting no bites, like no urgency to get nothing going. And this morning I grabbed the first thing, one of the first loads that came my way that had some urgency to it. And I got it at 1375. I even put the post up here, 11 Missouri to Carlton, Tennessee, to Carlton, Texas. And he sold it to me for $1,200, and I offered $1,375, and he gave it to me right away, and that comes out to $298 per load mile and $274 after you include the 41-mile bounce on 5,000 pounds, a load of couches. As far as states that I'm seeing that I would say are acceptable states that you should do good, now you broke it down into different territories. As far as demand, what I'm seeing, what I would consider good states would be can you hear me all right?
Yeah, I can hear you. I'm sorry. I got a little bit of stuff going on in my background.
Okay. Would be Alabama, Arkansas, Florida, Georgia, Louisiana, North Carolina, South Carolina, Tennessee. Those are all high-demand states. If you're in those states, you should be able to get a decent rate coming out. I left out California. California would be on that list as well, but on my spreadsheet that I make every day, I've X'd it out because I don't go there. And states that I would recommend that I would say are average right now is Arizona, Idaho, even Maine. The state of Maine is on this list, but you got so many other surrounding states that are around Maine that Maine possibly it wouldn't be that well. I hardly ever go to the Northeast, but it's on the list of showing decent numbers. Mississippi and Texas and all the other ones. Everybody should know by now what the red states are, the states to stay out of.
All right. Well, we got a caller, got a question real quickly. Caller from the 717. Caller, what's your name? What you calling about?
Hi, Rico. This is Elizabeth. And hi, Chad.
Hey there,
Elizabeth.
Hey, I'm doing good. How are you guys today?
Hey, we're well.
Good. Hey, I just wanted to share. I had a conversation with an agent today that just kind of made me think, and I just thought I'd share this with you guys because I thought it was interesting. I had a conversation with an agent for one of the humongous brokers. I'm not going to say any names, but it's one of the biggest brokers out there. And he was telling me that he's been seeing some really crazy stuff happening in the industry, and he's been doing this for years, and he had trucks and drivers before, and he ended up getting into the brokerage side and getting rid of the trucks. And he was telling me that he's been noticing, you know, that customers are wanting to pay less to move their loads, but carriers are wanting, you know, so much more than they used to. You know, he'd say I have a load posted for $3.83 a mile, and it normally moves for like $2.50, $3 a mile, and I'm still getting hammered, and they're telling me they can't move it for $3.83 a mile. So people are taking notice, which on the one hand is a good thing, but then he also mentioned, he said, between you and me, he said, this broker is looking more into moving into intermodal now because of this and going back to rail. So I think that, I don't know how this will all play out, but I think that, you know, there's going to be a ceiling at some point where, you know, we need to not push so hard that these other business owners are going to decide to go a different route, and you know, and we get pushed out.
I hear where you're coming from. I don't think that it's. How can I say this?
I know where she's coming from too, but I'm not going to accept less. Everything has to get Like, what was that number you gave me earlier, Rico? We were talking about how much freight has to go by truck. Even though it hits the rail, even though it goes by ship, it's going to eventually go by truck, you know. And now it's push. I mean, hell, well, it's our time to push. It's just people are more educated. I'm usually the last one that leaves the truck stop. That's for a reason. I'm not going to, you know, I know what the demand is, and I know that the rate is going to get paid eventually. Go ahead, Rico.
Right, I think Chad really pushes the envelope. Chad really, he's really aggressive on his rates. He's super aggressive. Chad is probably a lot more aggressive than I am when it comes down to rates. And I take my hat off to Chad because he gets some really good rates. I mean, he gets some of his rates are reefer rates, and he's pulling the drive in. So,
that's true.
I mean, I'm definitely not gonna knock him on that. But I think that this is, like we've been harping on too, it's really an opportunity for us, the motor carriers right now, the small motor carriers, to really take advantage of the capacity crunch and really start going out and getting our own customers. And it kind of takes away, because on the spot market is just that. You know, it's not the contract rate. It's if you need something moved, then it's got to go right away right now, then you're basically at the mercy of the market, and if you're in a really tough market right now, and you got to get a move, then unfortunately you're going to have to pay whatever you're going to have to pay the piper. I strongly like that all of this stuff is just a lot of these brokers are getting upset because we are getting a lot of traction out there. I'm starting to see more and more people that are hearing about the podcast. I'm getting more messages from people that I have no clue who they are. And, I mean, it's a good thing, but at the same time, you know, I think that, you know, some of these guys are really getting pissed off that, hey, who are you? Why are you guys pulling back the curtain on us and exposing, you know, what's going on? But I'm saying that to say this, it's still the guys that are listening to us and that are taking our advice and everything, you still have to go out and do the hard work. You still got to make sure that you're sitting down and that you're doing your numbers, and that if you're moving on the spot market, you should have, you know, you should have your bottom line number based on what your operating cost is. I mean, sometimes You can be the windshield, and sometimes you're the bug. Don't sit around and be the bug all alone, getting hit by the windshield because you're trying to get astronomical numbers. Sometimes you got to know when to fold and when to plane.
Right. I think one of the things that you just nailed, hit the nail on the head, Rico, when you were saying at the CMC and now again today, you know, that we need, now is the opportunity for us to go out and get our own customers because, you know, not everyone's going to be able to move stuff intermodal. You know, the small guy is not necessarily going to move stuff intermodal. So we need to be prepared that if some of these larger businesses do start to take their stuff that way, you know, it's all right. We've already got our own customers, you know.
Exactly. And not only that, we have to start looking into, you know, expanding. Not necessarily, we may not necessarily want to expand our motor carriers, but, I mean, if we got customers and we can't move all the freight, we got to look into starting our own small brokerages and beginning to network with one another to be able to cover, you know what I'm saying, to be able to cover our customers' loads, so on and so forth. I was talking to Chad earlier, and I've seen a number before, and it kind of just, it blew my mind a little bit. But in transportation, there's over $660 billion a year that's going to be spent on transportation in this country. $660 billion with a B. That is a, I mean, that's, wow. I mean, I still can't really wrap my head around that. And we're just trying to get our small share of the pie.
Yeah. Makes sense.
Right. I want all the pie I can get.
Chad, you want all the pie, Knight.
That pie belongs to me. When somebody posts a good rate on the group page and I'm sitting at home, I'm like, man, I can't be sitting home no longer. I got to go out there and get it. Man, everybody's going to take all these loads and I ain't going to have none left for me. All right, I'll take that. I'm just messing with
it. I think it's pretty cool, though, that people are taking notice, though, that there's a difference happening, you know, now in our industry with, you know, we're demanding higher rates. I think that that's cool.
Right.
So.
Yes,
yeah.
Absolutely. We're getting our share. And like Rico, when we talked earlier on the phone, but the person that first that's going to hurt is the brokers. When you start seeing them, the large brokers going out of business and selling out, and now you know we're really hurting that middleman. Until that happens, hey, get all the getting while the getting's good, just like my father used to tell me when I was in high school. Get all the getting while the getting's good. And right now it's good. And right,
I like that.
And Kevin Rutherford said this at the CMC. Now is the better time. And Kevin Rutherford's been around transportation, you know, trucking and stuff, way longer than I have. And he said, you know, out of all of his years, he's never seen a time where it's better to become an owner-operator and get your own authority than what it is now. I'm just so thankful that I get to live in that part. I can't look down on my dad because he didn't make it as an owner-operator because I guess back then, you know, before my time, it was really hard. But for it to be as good as it is now, I can't see nobody not doing this. I really enjoy it. It's all the freedom in the world. That's why I get to choose to take off during this blitz that's getting ready to happen because it's so good what I got. I don't want nothing to take it away from me. I don't want to pull up on the scale and I get some guy up there that wants to collect points off of a mistake, like I'm missing a reflector or whatever. I don't know, you know, but it's not worth the gamble with. I drive legal. I drive safe. I keep my truck up to. I make good money. I'm able to put money back into my truck and keep it legal. But anyway, yeah, I'm getting off on another subject. But, yeah, times are good right now.
Yeah, and I just want to add to the fact that, you know, right now as far as it's so good to be an owner-operator, it's due to the education because, you know, let's just take it all back for a second. I mean, as far as myself is concerned, I'm always going to be grateful to Kevin Rutherford from what I learned from him because he was the spark that inspired me to say, okay, yeah, I really can make it as an owner-operator if I control my costs and know my numbers. And that's what sometimes when we talk about these rates, that's why I really try to pull back a little bit and I want to get people back on the page of making sure that you know your numbers. Don't just get so caught up and focused on rates. You need to understand your operating costs. What is your cost per mile? What is your fixed cost? What is your variable cost? All these different things so that you can run a tight ship that you actually are in the process of running a business and not just shooting from the hip and just saying, well, I should be making money because I'm getting these great rates. great rates. It's not really about how much you make. It's about how much you keep. And if you don't know what you're making and how it's, if you're not, so you don't understand where your budget is and know where your money's going and how it's being spent, then you really don't know how much you're really making. You're just kind of flying by the seat of your pants. And then when disaster strikes, you know, looking at stars because you don't know what the heck happened. And that's why I really want to try to pull back a little bit and just, hey, let's come back down to earth, people. Let's make sure that we're doing the hard work, that we're doing our numbers, that we're getting our numbers and everything squared away.
Absolutely. I love keeping track of my numbers.
Got a couple more calls on hold. You got anything else you want to ask?
No, that was it. Thank you, guys. You have a great afternoon. Great evening.
Hey, thank you.
Yes, ma'am.
All right. We got a caller from the 651. Caller, what's your name and where are you calling from?
Good afternoon, gentlemen. This is Matt.
Matt.
Hey there, Matt.
Pretty good. I just wanted to comment on Elizabeth's subject there. You know, it's great that we're getting that kind of attention, but I wouldn't read too much into it. I believe the last article I read for last year, trucking, and this is by weight, not by volume or anything like that, pure weight, which, you know, the railroad moves the heaviest stuff because they can do that cheapest.
Right.
The trucking industry, I believe, moved 84-86% of all freight by weight.
Wow.
Wow. That's a big number.
Yeah, so when you're talking small, lighter weight shipments, the railroad, you know, they're not even a dent. And I believe the railroad is operating at close to 90-some percent capacity. So until you start seeing them building a lot new rail lines and adding capacity, it's not much of a threat.
Yeah, wouldn't be much of a threat at all.
That's another thing. That's another thing that's so important. You know, especially by us networking and having such a diverse membership base and everybody's sharing information. The information is what's driving us to learn and understand that we can push for rates and so on and so forth. Because, I mean, Matt just came in with some more solid, rock solid information that we can use to, you know what I'm saying, okay, let's take everything into consideration.
And railroads aren't that much of a competition in the type of freight we're talking about anyway. I mean, unless you're dealing in strict commodity freight, you know, the dry van stuff that could go into a container and, you know, we could load it this week, but as long as it's there within the next 3 weeks, we don't care. You know, that's rock-bottom price freight right there. That's the only thing the railroad can handle. They can't handle anything that's time-sensitive.
Right.
No.
Right. So
100% of the stuff that I do, time-sensitive.
Yeah, exactly. They could affect rates, you know, a little bit, but... You know, at the current trend, even if the railroad was adding capacity, I wouldn't view it as a threat right now. Only in a downturn in the freight volumes.
Yeah,
so where are you
I at, agree.
Today, Matt?
What's that?
I said, where are you at today?
I am sitting in Homestead, Florida, waiting to load in the morning.
Okay. You got contract freedom in Florida, right?
Yep. And I was just going to comment, too, what Chad was saying about at the CMC. Not only about Kevin's experience, but Chuck from Traffics. He stood up. He's got, I think he said, almost 50 years experience in the industry. So double of what even Kevin Rutherford has. And Chuck was saying that he has never seen a time in the industry, well, other than under, like, regulation for rates, that has been so good for the opportunity for an owner-operator right now.
Yeah, I remember when he gave
that's
that
right.
last – when he mentioned that at the CMC, Rico got excited. Rico was talking about that after the class. Can you believe what he said? You know, I remember that. That was some good stuff.
Yeah, and
I'm planning on I want to be reaching out to Chuck real soon. I want to try to have him on the podcast.
Yeah.
He seems like a very informative guy.
Yep, been in the industry a long time. He knows both the trucking side of it, the brokerage side of it, you know, inside out. So great resource.
Absolutely.
And something that we definitely need to tap into.
So,
all right. Well, Max, you have something else you want to add? We got a few more callers that's going. They get the one.
No, that's it for now. So we'll catch up with you guys later.
All right.
Yes,
well,
sir.
We appreciate it, Matt.
Yep.
Let's see. We got a caller from the 316. Caller from the 316. What's your name? What you calling about?
Well, Rico, it's Bruce again. How you doing?
I'm well, Bruce. How about yourself?
I'm doing fine. How you doing, Chad?
Outstanding. And yourself?
I'm doing good. The sun's shining. I'm heading west toward the house. How does that sound?
Oh,
well,
man. Good time.
Are you good? You're going high. How long are you going to stay at home, Bruce?
Probably over the weekend. I'm unloading Friday, and then I'll sit till Monday and go back out again.
Back out there and face the skills, right? Bruce ain't scared, is he? Bruce ain't scared. He's gonna take on the blitz as if it was
That's
just
right.
another
Bruce
day, right?
Well, you know, last year I ran right through it. I ran up and down the eastern seaboard on the I-95 corridor, and I never saw one inspection anywhere.
That's kind of like I was saying. I told Chad, one year I ran right through it, and a lot of times when they're doing their little blitz, I like to run at night anyway. And usually I try to run at night and don't have any problems, don't see anybody, and there's not a problem nowhere. And I can just slide right on through, do my business, and get in the truck stop early in the morning where there's plenty of parking and relax and enjoy myself and don't have any worries.
Rico, I had three different observations this week that I think might just be tidbits of information that people might be want to know about. The first one is the lady who was talking about the brokerage and, you know, what the broker was telling her about the railroads. I read in a – Elizabeth, yeah. I was reading in a agricultural magazine – because I used to haul a lot of ag commodities. I still haul it, but it's just in a different form, that the railroads in the Dakotas are 30 to 60 days behind in delivering hopper cars to the grain elevators to move their grain that they've already contracted to have moved this spring.
Wow.
Wow.
Yeah, 30
wow.
to 60
rail
days.
Here it is. They're 30 days behind, and they can't even. And they're at what the other guy said. Matt said that 87 capacity. Well, what happens whenever the rail system just can't do it anymore? Who has to do the work then? Right back on the truck.
Yeah, and this is what's happening up in there is, you know, like Quaker Oats there in Iowa uses thousands of bushels of oats every day to make our breakfast cereals. And they're not able to get their product because a good bit of their oats is coming out of the Dakotas. And so they're having to pay truck rates to get it in there. And it's causing
the problem. And that's what I was just fixing to say. That's what I was fixing to say. Anybody with hopper bottoms or anybody that can pull that type of commodity, their ears should have perked up and they should be getting giddy and doing homework tonight and tomorrow and making phone calls to Quaker Oats, anybody else up there in that region to try to pull that freight.
That's right.
They could make a killing.
The second thing I noticed this week, and I usually, if a broker will allow me to have a direct deposit into my checking account, I'll do it because that eliminates having to go home, get the mail, find the check, send it to the bank, all that, you know. Sometimes it could give me, you know, the money as much as a week or 10 days quicker. But this one broker who I would like to do business with, but they wanted to charge me $15 to have a direct deposit, ACH, into my checking account. And I said, no, you mail me the check. I'm not going to take a $15 discount on my freight. For that convenience, they were assuming that it was like a quick pay, and so for getting the money quick, I wanted it. You know, I would be willing to take a hit. And I said, no, I'm not doing that. You know, I just thought that was uncalled for. You know, I mean, issue me a check if that's what it takes. Pay the postage, but I'm not going to pay you $15 for that service.
Yeah, a lot of people are using the quick pays and the things like that as another profit center. They'll give you the rate, but they're nickel and dime you. They're eating away back at your rate for another profit center for themselves.
Yeah, and then I unloaded at one place this last week where I had to pay a lumper. Well, it was either a 3% upcharge on a MasterCard, or I had to get a ComCheck service. Well, the company I'm with, I think, charges me like $5 a check. So it was cheaper for me on this load to use my credit card, even though I had to pay them a 3% upcharge, which there again, you know, to me that's the merchant. If you want to accept credit cards, you accept the fee for the you know, merchant discount. But no, they passed it on to the poor trucker again. You know, I thought, man, you guys are, you know, you're playing this game the wrong way. You know, they wouldn't take cash.
Yeah.
So somebody was going to make $5 or $7 off of me because of that, you know, having to pay the lumper. And then the third thing.
And that's something that we talked about before, Bruce. I think that's something that we talked about before. We need to try to get together and figure out a way because, you know, time and money has value attached to it. And we're paying these fees up front in a lot of cases, and that should be a convenience fee for us doing that. At least that's my opinion. But go ahead. What was your third thing?
Well, the third thing was is that I've been hauling for the same broker out of Nogales all winter. And this last week when I loaded for him, usually his price, he's just been pretty much, you know, a very fair price, and so I don't negotiate real hard with him. But this time going into the holiday weekend, I said, man, it'd sure be nice if you'd pay me a couple $300 extra dollars on this load because I'm going to be running over the weekend. And he says, well, I can give you $100. I said, well, that's better than nothing. And he said, I usually like to work on a 10% margin. And, you know, he told me what the shipper was paying him for the load and what I was getting, and, you know, he wanted to do it for 10%. Now, I'm not questioning the guy's integrity because everything he's told me all winter has been true to form, but are brokers really only operating on a 10% margin, or is he one of the guys that hasn't got the memo from the big boys yet that you can try to get more?
Well, it depends on the
size. There's no real number on that.
It really depends on the size of the brokerage. Some of the brokerages that are publicly traded companies, you can find out, you know, a little bit about what their profit margins and stuff are. And I think even Kevin Rutherford talked about once when he was, I think he gave a speech once at the TIA, that the average across the board, their average commission for most brokers is right around the 12.5% mark, somewhere in that ballpark. Now, the big guys, you know, they can make up on some of that stuff and really gouge. I've seen some of them shoot for as much as 30%. And if the shipper is not, it's crazy enough to allow them to continue to get those kind of rates and prices, then, you know, you can't really be mad at them because, I mean, it's America and it's a business, and, hey, if their service is that good and the people like paying that premium, then, hey, more power to them. But, you know, it's something for us to really be able to go out there and charge a retail rate for our services and be able to get a little bit of that capacity away from the brokers, at least on the desirable lanes that we want to cover anyway.
Well, I also did find out that this particular shipper who this broker hauls some for, the route we've been loading at, had three or four loads sitting in Nogales they couldn't find trucks for. So, you know, there must be some you know, pushback that maybe guys are demanding more than he's got in them and he just can't move them, which, you know, made me right away think,
well,
oh, I should be getting
that's probably now. If that's the case, he's not. He needs to brush up on. He maybe needs to come to the CMC and get with George Gallimore and brush up on his negotiating skills because. If you're in that situation, then you have to be able to go back to your shipper and say, look, you know, I'm working as hard as I can for you. I got trucks. There are trucks available that I can get for you, but we're not going to be able to move them for this. It's going to take whatever it is going to take, and add his commission in on top of that to get the, to make this happen. You know, but he needs to work on his negotiating tactics and say, look, you know, I'm getting the lowest move for you. I'm getting them. I'm not putting them on negligent carriers. That your load is getting the market on time. So on. I mean, you got to sell yourself.
Yeah.
when you're dealing with your customer, I mean, you gotta go in there and you gotta sell yourself and sell your services that you know you're taking a load off of their back by helping them find trucks and get good qualified motor carriers to move the freight and get it to market on time.
Well, I will say this, and as long as he's honest with me, he told me I'll get my same rate all through the year. You know, that he's going to protect me on the rate when the produce in Arizona and Nogales drops off, because he'll still have these frozen loads coming across the border. But, you know, there right away I began thinking, well, is this a long-term deal, and I'm willing to take a little bit less in the hot season so that I get a little bit better when the market cools off, or you know, is he going to just jump at the cheapest truck at that point then, too? You know, I mean, since it's my first year with him, doing business with him, I'm still feeling him out, I guess.
Well, it's all in the relationship building, you know. All of it goes in the relationship building aspect of it. So, you know.
You know, and I mean, I appreciate this broker because I take a snapshot picture of my bills of lading, email it to him. 2 weeks later, I have a check at my house. So that's the first thing good. The second thing is he doesn't want to know, other than when I'm loaded and when I get unloaded, unless he doesn't want check calls unless – I have trouble, and he needs to know about it. And so, in that sense, and I told him, I said, I appreciate that you treat me like the professional that I want to be and I think I am, and that you respect that of me, that you're not calling me three times a day for location checks and reefer temperatures and is the seal still on the trailer and all the other, you know, things we've all been through with some of the big brokerage houses.
Right, right. Well, Bruce, we got another call on the line. We want to wrap up that time real quick.
Have a good evening.
All right, thanks, Bruce.
Thank you.
Let's see. Let's go to caller calling in from the 608. Caller, what's your name? Where are you calling from?
Hey, fellas. It's Ray from Wisconsin, Ray Moreno. Got a couple of things I wanted to mention. One was an answer for Bruce, who was just on the line, and the other thing was about the rail stuff. When I was a broker, I dealt with some customers that did intermodal and also some customers that didn't like intermodal. One of the things that is a problem with intermodal is that there's so much vibration going on in those rail cars that it will literally destroy product. So that's one thing. I'd say that takes off of probably like half of the freight that we're hauling right there. Boom. That just cannot be shipped by rail. And two, I'm still on the email list for about six different carriers that email me every day. I'm deleting their emails, but they're emailing me all their capacity for containers. So I don't think that the intermodal is as hot as some people like us to believe it is right now. I'm getting emails every day for all this capacity, you know, they're working hard to try and keep their trucks filled or trucks moving, something like that. But I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, even to add on to that, I remember some stuff about, just jogging my memory. I read something about how they have the containers are there and they need to be moved, but they don't have enough chassis. That either the chassis that are there are not in are not roadworthy, and they don't have adequate enough chassis to even move the containers that are ready to move. So that now you're back to the part where you're delaying. I mean, America was founded on getting products to market. It's a major thing in America. It's part of the Commerce Clause, being able to get your products to market. And if like Bruce was talking about with the grains and everything, if you're sitting 30 and 60 days backlog on getting your product to be able to even process it before you can even try to get it to market, that's not going to be feasible.
And that's one of the biggest things of rail is opportunity cost of the time that it takes. I had a shipper out of Chicago that I haul carrots from the West Coast. They ship carrots out of California to Chicago, and every week the trains would be late. They'd only get one shipment, one string of rail cars every week worth of carrots, and every week they were late. There was problems, you know. So shippers have to change around their whole supply chain logistics if they want to go rail. You know, there's some things that they could move by rail, but some things that they couldn't. So, I mean, just for a shipper to move to rail would take a substantial capital investment to rearrange their whole supply chain. So I really want to dispel any kind of worry that anybody has about rail taking over the freight. It's just not going to happen anytime in the very near future. But another thing that I want to talk about that Bruce was saying with brokers, I think 15% is pretty much the goal that TIA says that they'd like to make. And I went to school down in Arizona before I started my brokerage. And one of the tricks that they taught me about was they like to ask carriers, what do you need to move them? And so what they're doing there, what that dynamic is they're trying to see if you leave money on the table. So
right.
A lot of carriers, they might be used to a certain rate, but because of, you know, whatever it is, the spot market, you know, okay, so they've got $2,500 they could bill the shipper, but the usual rate is around 2,000 the carrier quotes them to. And that means they still got $500. And so they'll keep all that. A lot of the brokers, you know, and it's not their responsibility to say, okay, I'm just going to take my 15% and here's the rate. So for me, whenever I have a broker ask me what I need to move it for, I know I automatically bid high. I bid higher than I would normally to try and flush out them saying, no, I can't do it for that. And then I want to, you know,
right.
Basically to kind of clear the table and go, okay, well, what can you do it for? And then another thing that I'd like to add in negotiating with brokers is as soon as I hear a broker mispronounce a city or a shipper or something like that, I know I got them. I know I got them. They're mine. That means because they're not familiar like they should be with that customer, with that area, whatever it is. So it's those little subtle cues that you have to pick up on. And that, you know, over time with dealing with brokers, you know, you just learn what's what. But anyways, when I was brokering and sourcing my own customer base, I would tell shippers that if I can get the truck or that shipment moved for less, then I will pass the savings back on to you. So I took
exactly.
my commission, and I would bill them for less. And many times I got people, shippers calling me back going, oh, you miss, your invoice isn't correct. And I said, no, that's correct, because I was able to get the shipment moved for less. And
sometimes
right,
that's a great way to endear yourself to your customer.
Some of them would come back and would just say, no, you know what, the rate is what it is, and you just keep it. And some of them would say, thank you very much. Hey, that's great. So, you know, that that's a selling point. That was a selling point for me that worked and that impressed some of the shippers that I worked with. So that's what I got for today. So I don't want to filibuster.
Well, I like that first piece of advice. If I talk to someone one-on-one, that's some of the same stuff I try to tell people on the phone. And the same exact stuff. Like if a broker calls you, and they got little trick questions to get you to start thinking on that low end, and to get you to name that low end, and just like you said, go ahead and give your high number, and when you give that high number, that sort of clears the table off, and whenever they come back with their number, it's always a whole lot different. If they have the money, it's a whole lot different. Like another trick question that they'll ask is, where are you trying to move that truck to? You know, have you ever heard that one before?
Yeah.
Where are you trying to get that truck to? If
oh,
you
yeah.
leave the destination blank? Well, tell me, what's your response if a broker asks you that? I got my response, but I don't know. What's your response?
I usually tell them, you know, I got trucks going to a lot of different places. What can I help you with?
There you go. Okay, that's good. I mean, whenever they ask you, where are you trying to get that truck back to, when they say the word back to, they're already trying to get you to, when they say that word back, my immediately saying is, I'm not a backhauler, I'm an expediter. Do you got an expedited load for me? And then I let them know, well, how much urgency is on their load? If they hesitate about expedite and how they answer that, is it an urgent load? And then if they tell me, well, we got
right.
loads going to Iowa, Tennessee, Texas. You know, when they say we got all these loads, I'll say, well, tell me the load that's going to be the hardest for you to move. Out of all these freight that you have, tell me the one that's going to be the most difficult for you. That's the one I want to put my bid on because I'm quoting the other load. I'll put my offer in on that. And then whenever you start off with the hardest one that they got and they come at you with something like 220 a mile, then you know all the rest of it ain't even worth talking about. Or you can throw out your number and let them know this is where you'd be on their ugliest load. And then, you know, the conversation would carry on how it's supposed to after that.
That's good. I like
that piece of advice.
Yeah, that is key to really just flush out what they want. Get them to show their cards. You know what it is, but you also bring up a really good point. Something that I noticed, and this is a dynamic that I never knew that was out there until Internet Truck Stop actually published. I read an article that was saying 80% of the trucks that are out there today are a spinoff from a manufacturer. So what the manufacturer did was they started their own trucking company, and their trucking company hauls their freight, and if they don't have their raw materials, you know, getting loaded back into that truck, well, then they have to broker their own or find a broker, you know, to get their backhaul. And what I noticed as being a broker, a lot of the dispatchers or load planners that work for these outfits, they see a load on the load horse that they want, and then they call the broker and they say, book it. And that's it. They don't negotiate. And I was like, okay. So as a broker, I would, as soon as they did that, I would send them the rate confirmation sheet with what I wanted them to make. And there's so much of that out there still today that I believe, is truly what messes up the true for-hire carrier, like all of us are that are listening on the show right now.
I think it's funny you say that, Ray. From my experience from brokering as well, I've had that very same experience happen to me, and I think that's why it's so critically important that we are sharing this information, that we're getting it out here to the public at large, as far as us individuals that are for hire motor carriers, small guys, because for so long, we have taken the approach of, well, that's a good rate, or we just go along with what everybody else is doing. We kind of like, sheep, and we just follow what we think everybody else is doing, because this is the way everybody else has told me that it was done. And we never even question the possibility of is there another way to do it. We just keep going along to get along, and that's why a lot of people have been miserable failures instead of, challenging the status quo.
Absolutely. A good businessman once told me that you have to search to uncover solutions for your customers in order to serve them better than the next guy.
Absolutely.
There's and that's the thing, is you always have to ask questions. Kevin Rutherford was saying, the guys that, instead of spending time at the truck stop sitting there watching TV, the guys that are taking that extra time to do more research and work on their trade, hone their craft and stuff like that, those are the guys that are going to win.
Absolutely.
Do better, it's really kind of scary, the percentage that there's only 20% of the trucks on the road that are true for-hire carriers. It just amazes me. So to see the rates finally starting to go up these days feels so awesome. I'm so frustrated for years, going, when is this going to change? When are things going to, be different? And hearing so many answers going, in the negative. And now it's finally happening, man. Thanks, Rico, and Chad for doing what you're doing. Appreciate it, guys.
Thank you, guys. Thank you guys calling in and give us the motivation to keep going. So we appreciate you guys' participation. Well, Chad,
absolutely.
Like, man, we blew straight through and a little bit of overtime there on that hour right there. It was about 15 after the hour. So anything you want to say in closing out?
Goal for this week, I'll write about it and put it on the Rate Per Mile Masters page, is it's going to be related to get away from the stigma of sticking to the $2 per mile rate. Everybody always wants the broker, they want to offer you a load, and it's always slightly below the $2 a mile. The carrier's always thinking, it's easy number to say, if it's 600 miles, to say 1,200. It's going to be related to that. I'm going to write an article and put that on there. It's basically come up with a different number besides $2 a mile. It's been $2 a mile for three and a half years ever since I've been into this, where everybody just always quotes everything on dry band based on $2 a mile. Get away from that number. Start doing some hard math and do a better number than $2 a mile. Just don't even let that be a part of your equation. I'm going to write about it, but you can read about that later on Ray from Mile Masters' Facebook group page. Thanks for having me on, Rico, and I'm glad we was able to do this podcast here a little bit more organized.
Cool. Well, all right, Chad. Well, I appreciate it. Well, you guys, I'm, like I say, coming to you live from Kinley, North Carolina, filling in for Kevin Rutherford tonight on the Rate Per Mile podcast. And in the words of Kevin Rutherford, signing off from Kinley, North Carolina, this is Rico Muhammad telling you to be safe, be profitable, and do the hard work. Good night, everybody.